This week on All Things Considered, we've been talking with Dr. William Masters and Mrs. Virginia Johnson about human sexual relationships. Their new book, The Pleasure Bond, A New Look at Sexuality and Commitment, translates their scientific research on human sexual function into language for the general reading public. Tonight, in our final conversation, Masters and Johnson talk about the influence of the equality movement, their term for women's liberation, the influence on sexual relations in America. Has the movement enhanced our sex lives? Has it been detrimental? Mrs. Johnson.
Let's talk about its potential.
All right.
And some of which is being realized by some people and many people, and it goes on to be really greater in potential than possibly anyone's realized to date.
Well, the potential comes from really for both sexes. And I'm only qualified to talk about one sex. From a male point of view, if and when we ever achieve true sexual equality in this country, a single standard, this will be the greatest contribution that can be made to effectiveness of male sexual functioning. Primarily because it will tend to remove a great deal of the pressures of performance that our culture's placed on the male. Over the years, the male has blithely almost assumed the role of sex expert in the relationship. It's a role that not only has he assumed, but that in many instances the female partner has been delighted to delegate to him. Here I am, take care of me. This has put upon the male an incredible pressure. No man really knows anything about female sexual functioning from a subjective point of view, and he knows very little objectively other than what he by repute or report. So that this business of having divine guidance and that the male is the sex expert and the only thing he has to do is a little of this and a little of that and the female will be rewarded has been an incredible burden upon the male.
Mm-hmm.
It's led to all manner of basic, not only sexual dysfunction in the male, but an awful lot of personality trauma. Trying to play a role that he really isn't qualified to play. It's exactly the same as the male presuming he can breathe for the female, and he can't do that. So the potential is that despite the fact that in a transition phase, if we have some of the militant type of women's lib approach that you've had your turn, now it's ours,
yes.
Old boy, that can be threatening, of course. But presuming that we're talking about achieving this stage of single-sex equality, where two people are most effective working, being sexually active together with each other, then the male will be tremendously relieved of performance.
Well, one of the benefits is that women have become freer to initiate sexual activity. Are women taking advantage of that ability?
Well, there's always an overkill, of course, and a lot of women misunderstand what equality is. It's not only equal privilege, it's also equal responsibility. It's only the way, you know, two people can get together and one of them, both of them remain whole, if you want to bring it right down to that. There's going to be misunderstanding, and the fallout is going to threaten men and women, for instance. The threat comes in two areas. Number one has to do with misunderstanding of it. I think my partner touched on it earlier when he said when the newfound opportunity to express yourself is done in a way that you've had your turn, now I'm going to catch up. It doesn't work in sex, let's just face it. It doesn't make it because self-esteem is deeply wound up in it. For the man who might feel threatened by woman's equality or, as you specifically said, initiating, this simply says, so many words, that he's been taught, he's learned through all the sources available, to equate his self-esteem in his sexual supremacy. In other words, it's his right and his privilege, and it's also his burden. When he equates this with self-esteem, and someone comes along and suddenly says, or suddenly does by word or deed, a takeover, then that's certainly going to shake and threaten a little bit. It can devastate. Women should and can have an opportunity to express those sexual feelings. But here comes the fact that women are potentially multi-orgasmic. By the virtue of their anatomy and their physiology, this is something they can be, and age doesn't seem to make that much of an intrusion upon it. The area I deeply resent is taking this fact and saying, yay, give it to us. For heaven's sake, it's like saying, yes, you can eat 3 Cornish hens, and you every time you must give me 3 Cornish hens because I have the capacity for it, I am thereby entitled to it. Now, what a woman does in a case like that is completely wipe out her own privilege of variation, her own privilege to express herself according to how she is at a given moment. Militancy in sex does not fit, does not work, has no place.
On the other hand, it's a natural outgrowth, again, of your basic research, your ability to tell the world that a woman was physiologically capable of this. Isn't it natural? Here I go again.
No, it's not natural.
For her, then, to go and say?
No, it's hostile. It is not natural. It is hostility.
Well, it depends on how she says it. If she expresses her need to the male, that's fine. If she says, look, I'm entitled.
Oh, and demands.
And demands, that's another. And you can use that information either way.
If she really knows herself sexually, and she really has defined for herself her potential for multiple orgasms, and a particular time, her need to have him with her, to be responsive to her and accepting of her activity that goes on to achieve it, and then for him to say, you have a right to one, then that's the woman that has should have the privilege of saying, in effect, now you're legislating my response.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, that's where the myth of the mutual orgasm came in. If the only thing that is good about sex is mutual orgasm, that means there must be a male mark on the wall with every female mark on the wall, and the male can't do this.
Sure. And it just puts a double burden.
Puts a tremendous burden right back on the male.
And it removes any kind of real individual expression in a sexual format, a sexual context.
And as a matter of fact, when one is being orgasmic, one is basically concerned with I, me, be it a he or a she. And so much of, we're not decrying the pleasure of the mutual orgasm, but to say that it's the be-all and end-all and everything must end up here or we have wasted is such a tragic misconception because most of the pleasure of mutual orgasm is retrospective because we're so involved with ourselves momentarily at the time.
Well, even for those who have sufficient sexual maturity so that they're not going for goals and they can appreciate, which is a little rare, the moment of mutual orgasm. If they had, that's one thing, but to set out to achieve it, to set out to work toward it, to program your feelings to have it, can eventually devastate the ability to be responsive in the first place.
It's back to the old thing that intercourse per se, or any part of it, is not the be-all and end-all of sexual interaction. It has never been, and the minute we think any part of sex is unique or only as a goal, uniquely only as a goal, we're not only making a mistake in putting pressure of the goal achievement upon us, but we're missing out on all the other incredible pleasures that go with this magnificent opportunity for two people to interact.
Dr. William Masters and his wife and partner, Virginia Johnson. Their new book is The Pleasure Bond.